Good morning, all. It's 10 o'clock. We should get going. Firstly, welcome to everybody, in particular the team from Treasury. As you know, we're looking at the deposit insurance bill and the levies bill, let's call them that. Is that more or less the term I think Treasury uses? We didn't get any submissions from the public hearings, so we have to proceed. We take it that the stakeholders in civil society who are affected are either satisfied with the process in the NA or feel there's no point in pursuing it, even if they're not satisfied. So here we are. We did get a submission, another submission, a presentation from Vukile and his team. And Dennis Ryder raised some very useful points. Dennis, we should come back to them. I have since read the bill and more carefully the PowerPoint presentation. We asked our officials to not officials, staff to actually help with setting out some of the key policy issues that are for the committee to consider. It's our decision-making, but they guide us. And we have received something, but unfortunately, it doesn't help to process the bill. But so I've gone back to Treasury this morning, about half an hour ago or so, but I reached them at about, I think, 10 minutes ago. So it's a bit tough on them, but we've agreed Vukile will, with his team, lead us on the policy issues as they appear from page 33 onwards or slide 33 onwards to 38. There's not much point looking at the submission from the staff from Parliament because it doesn't say anything of it's a very good overview of the key issues that have brought us here, but not the policy issues that surfaced on the NA side and that are covered by the Treasury. So it's unfortunate because committee colleagues, we should not rely on Treasury really. They do their job. We're holding them to oversight, to account. It's for Parliament, assisted by our staff on technical issues. Ultimately, we make the policy decisions, but on technical issues, the staff's meant to help us to at least put the key issues before us. So, for example, Dennis, you raised several issues. They're not covered in that report. I'm not sure why. But anyway, you'll come back to us on them. But let's start with you, Vukile. And before we go on, Nkululeko, are there any apologies?
Morning, Chairperson. Yes, I received an apology from Ms. Mahlangu, Chair. That's
Yeah,
the
she's out of the
apology.
country and parliamentary business. I think she's in Canada for some parliamentary conference, right? So she'll
Yeah.
only get back, I think, later this week, but she'll be here next week, presumably. So we understand that. No other apologies, right? And from the Treasury side, is everybody on the platform, I mean? I see
Yes.
Vukile's
Good
here.
morning.
Sorry?
Apologies from the acting DG. He
No, we understand Vukile. Yeah, obviously, he's very busy and he's not expected to always be here. Okay, go for it, Vukile, from slide 33, if that's okay. Is the committee fine with that? Any other options that ought to go forward? As you know, what we usually do is look at the policy issues first in a bill, and once we arrive on agreement or disagreement with the policy issue, then what we do is we look at it line by line. There's no point looking line by line unless we identify the key policy issues. Okay, fine. So over to you, Vukile. Is anybody else got any other approach to this from the committee side?
Supported.
Good. Let's move on. And Dennis, you were very good last time. I hope you remember what you said.
Supported, Chairperson.
Okay, supported. Mama Rakhale supports us. She's the whip of the whole committee, Dennis, not just the ANC. Okay. We had a big debate last term. And so we have to toe the line here. Otherwise, we'll all get fired. Okay, over to you, Vukile. But fortunately, Mama Rakhale is my buddy, so she's not likely to be fired. Okay, let's go on.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay,
And I'd just like to just confirm that I can share my screen.
Yes, you may forget it.
Okay, excellent. Okay.
Vukile, you're on mute.
Gile, you muted yourself, I think. Oh dear.
Sorry, apologies for that. I hope that's now audible.
No, we can hear you now. Good. We can hear you now. So again, to slide 33, please.
Yes.
Public submissions and treasury response. Yes, thank you.
Chef, for some reason, when I try and project, my microphone turns off. I'm wondering whether, Janine, you can help me just project and I can talk through the slides, if that's okay. Apologies, Chair.
No, it's not your fault.
Thank you. I'll project.
But we do have it, so it's not like it's the end of the world.
So thank you, Chair. Just as Janine projects, thanks again for the opportunity to recap the deliberations at the SCOF. Before kicking into the specifics of the presentations that we had received and our responses to that, I'd like to maybe spend a second just recapping some of the broad principles that have guided us so far.
All right, go for that. Yeah.
From a policy.
Very quickly, though. Yeah.
Okay. So Jay, you'll just obviously be mindful that whenever we seek to impose levies, there's always going to be, a sense that we are charging too much, especially at the moment, just given the various cost pressures that are being experienced by consumers. And an important point that we tried to make throughout the presentations are twofold. One is that we don't believe that it's possible to completely avoid the cost of regulation. All that can happen is that you can distribute the incidents. And what we mean by that is that ultimately a weak regulatory framework will cost consumers of financial services through increased complaints, increased predatory action by certain financial firms, and ultimately the increased likelihood of failure of financial institutions and risk to financial stability. The second important principle point, Chair, is that as much as possible, we have inserted proportionality into the two bills in front of you. And what we mean by that, Chair, is that the larger institutions pay more, the larger sectors contribute disproportionately more to funding the regulators, who have only levied on a cost recovery basis. And one additional important point, Chair, is that we've also incorporated a mechanism for firms that, for whatever reasons, either in the operating environment or something specifically related to that firm, they can approach the regulators to have for additional accommodation in putting off or not paying levies. So overall, we feel like we have gone as far as we conceivably can to accommodate the various comments that we've received and requests for accommodation. Janine, can I pass over to you to take us through the specific comments and how we responded to them?
Janine, are you there?
Thank you. Yes, apologies. Sorry, I'm just having a little screen problem.
No problem.
So in relation to some of the specific comments, there was a request for clarity on the definition of supervised entity by the South African Insurance Association. And so as a result of that, we proposed to amend the definition to allow to provide that the definition clearly links to the definition of supervised entity, both in the Financial Sector Regulation Act, but of the types that are listed in Schedules 1 to 6 of the bill. So we clarified the scope of the definition. It had been highlighted that that would be beneficial, and so we ensured that we provided that clarification.
Look, on this one, we'll do one by one so that we clear, so we don't keep coming back, you see. We can do all and then come back to each, it'll waste time, because you've already done an overview, right? So I suggest we look at each one, Janine, Vukile, and members of the committee, and then say whether we okay with it or not. Now, this to me, coverage colleagues, seems straightforward, right? It's a technical definition. Anyone got any issue on this? I don't see any hands up. And Kulileko, you'll help me with that, right? So good. Let's move on to the next one, which is a duplication of the levy payment.
Yes. So it was highlighted that there should not be a duplication of the levy payments to the FSCA and the PA, as the impact on smaller insurance would be significant. And And it was highlighted in response that the cost of funding regulators is based on cost recovery and is thought to be kept at a minimum. And the Reserve Bank will fund a portion of the Prudential Authority's total costs, including indirect costs, which I think has been further highlighted in the presentations, would be estimated at about 40%. So there is no duplication of the cost. And then Clause 11, it was highlighted in the levies bill, has been amended to provide a greater facility for the regulators to grant exemptions on their own initiative. And that was in response to some comments received. So it doesn't necessarily...
On this one, oh, sorry, finish, Jin.
Aicha.
Yeah.
I've got a hand from Mr. Ryder.
Yes, Mr. Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, providing we're finished with that.
Are we looking at the second one there, duplication of levy payment? Are you with that one?
Yeah,
go for that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, good morning, everybody. So I think that, again, this is probably where my biggest bugbear comes in, and I'm sorry, my screen doesn't look great because of the light behind me. But saying that costs will be kept to a minimum is kind of saying, you know, a piece of string is excellent. There's no incentive really for the regulator to keep its costs down. And I think this is our biggest concern. The Clause 11 amended to allow for regulators to grant exemptions on their own initiative. If I can just ask, is there an appeal authority? Perhaps is there a clause that will allow someone to appeal if you ask for an exemption? The regulator declines it, will there be an appeal authority perhaps to what? I don't know, the Reserve Bank or to Treasury?
Yeah. Is there any other question in regard to this? Any other questions? I don't see any other hand up. Okay, look, firstly, you know, for those of you who are not around, you may not know this, but we had huge issues arising around the insurers, particularly those emerging insurers who had, you'll remember, Jenny, I'm not sure, Vukile, to what extent you were involved in the bill, I've forgotten. You know, you'll recall that the black insurers in particular, they were really like cheesed off with the bill, and what had happened was, you might recall, we postponed processing the bill, and then had the financial sector transformation hearings over 3 days or whatever, right? It was because mainly the insurers came on the first bill. And then we said, nope, we're not proceeding with the insurers bill until we deal with the broader issues. So here, they had quite a legitimate case, sometimes exaggerated, sometimes unfair, but overall, I mean, the majority of the claims were less regarded as legitimate by, I think, more than one party, actually. So I can't recall, but, you know, there was some degree of consensus anyway. well, certainly with the EFF and ANC, and I think maybe the DA too, actually, on this one. So I think we should be cautious here, and exactly the point that Dennis is raising occurred to me when I looked at this earlier this morning, that what does that mean, Clause 11 amended to allow for regulators to grant exemptions? Is there some requirement of them to, well, I see somewhere else you talk about public hearing. So firstly, will this involve some sort of public consultation? Secondly, is it the case here that the minister must look at it and sort of okay it or reject it? And if so, on what criteria? Thirdly, is there a role for Parliament to play in this regard and so on? But the first part of your argument to me seems fair, Janine. The cost of funding regulators will be based on cost recovery as kept at a minimum. It's based on cost recovery. Now, this is very surprising, eh? I mean, this is 40%. The Reserve Bank will fund. Is this correct as I read it, Janine Wakile? That the Reserve Bank will fund a portion of PSO, including indirect costs, estimated at 40%. Wow. Okay, there it is. Any other questions? Nope. Okay, over to you, Janine and Wakile.
Thank you very much. In relation to, you know, the determination of the levies, firstly, the actual imposition is imposed in terms of the legislation, which will be, you know, enacted by Parliament, and there's been the various consultation processes that have been undertaken through the parliamentary process and prior to that. And then any subsequent adjustments will be addressed in terms of Chapter 16 of the FSRA, which provides, you know, that every year, if there's going to be any adjustments, there has to be public consultation, and also there would be standards issued, etc. So this would be done in terms of a public consultation process. So there would be consultation in relation to adjustments in the levies each year and the budgets of the institutions. So that's an important mechanism overseeing the levies going forward. But in relation to actual granting of exemptions, that's a discretionary process whether there would be exemptions. I imagine there would be submissions made if there was an actual application on behalf of a financial institution regarding the proposed exemptions and the request for an exemption, and then, you know, due consideration would be given by the regulator in relation to the request for exemptions. So
thank you, Janine. I was wondering, Chair, to interject to provide a little bit more detail on exactly how the appeal mechanism of the exemption would work, which is the direct content of Honourable Ryder's question, if you'd allow. Rita, could you provide just some details exactly how the mechanism would work and how a affected institution may go about appealing?
Thank you. Now, with respect to, you know, an appeal mechanism, those decisions of the regulators which constitute administrative action, they are then subject to reconsideration, an application for reconsideration by the Financial Sector Tribunal. And so there is that process for reconsideration, generally in relation to decisions of the regulators. So potentially, if there was a grievance with in relation to a decision of the regulator, it could potentially be then proposed to be reconsidered before the tribunal. Thank you. And then in relation to the funding provided by the Reserve Bank, can I perhaps ask Yannette or other colleagues from the Reserve Bank to confirm the arrangements relating to the funding?
Thank you, Janine. Yes, indeed. So the estimated 40% is correct. The Reserve Bank will be funding the indirect costs. So those would be your shared services, for example, IT infrastructure, building costs, those kind of shared services that we have across the PA, whereas the direct costs are what will be levied. Those would be, for example, PA-specific systems, staffing, those kind of costs would be in the 60% then. Thank you, Janine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions on this resolution?
No, I was about to say just very quickly, that means that that 40% is not such a burden on the Reserve Bank, because those are resources and other infrastructure they already have. It's like a shared service with the regulators that are relevant here. I think that's what you're saying. Is that right, Jenny? Hello?
Yes, that would be correct. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. I'm fine with this. I don't know what Dennis or anybody else has to say. Anyone want to come in? Nope. Okay, the next one is the number of representatives calculated using the average total number. Yeah, now this one, please explain.
Well, I think there was a bit of lack of clarity about how the number of representatives would be determined, which is relevant for determining then the levy imposed in certain categories of the for financial services providers. So this was more a question for clarification. And so it was explained, and this is also set out in the schedule for the Financial Sector Conduct Authority about how the average number of key individuals and representatives would be calculated. It would be based on the period from 1 September to the following 31 August of each year, and then dividing that number by 12. So then that is how it would be determined, the number of key representatives that would be used, the average number that would be determined over a year. So that's, you know, that was more a question for clarification than a particular issue. And then we come.
Excuse me. Any questions? Sorry. Can we stick to one at a time, right? Unless they're interrelated, is it linked to the very next one?
No. We can take any questions on this one.
Yeah, you see, what we're going to do is deal with one issue at a time. It just then makes it easier to go through it clause by clause. Dennis, or anybody else? I think it's. The committee is fine. Okay, next one.
So the next set of submissions are from Strait, the Central Securities Depository, and their initial comment is that all Central Securities Depositories and Associated Clearinghouse levies and of the Prudential Authority and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority should be viewed collectively and not in relation to each regulator, as they will have to be paid by a single supervised entity. And the response that is provided is that the levies are structured such that each type of supervised entity is charged a separate levy based on the different license activities that they are performing. And so the adoption of a Twin Peaks approach to regulation means that there are two separate regulators which have separate regulatory responsibilities in relation to the same supervised entities. And so then it is necessary and appropriate to be imposing levies for each of the regulators appropriately at an appropriate level in relation to the functions that they will be performing in relation to regulation and supervision.
Okay, any comments here from the colleagues? No. Okay. Yeah, you see, Janine, while I agree with you personally, this is exactly the set of issues that arose, you'll recall, previously. And in even a dinner arise, the issue is always, yeah, you see, Janine, you know, ultimately, the cost will be borne by the consumer, by the customer, the client. Now, of course, you argue, and understandably too, that look, if they might pay these levies that are burdensome, they might pay the cost of the levies that are burdensome on lower income people, but the cost of the failure for them in particular is disproportionately damaging. Excuse me. So I understand it's a trade-off, but then you see that's a generic trade-off, and what worries one though is that within the framework of agreement about that, a lot can be done which is not consistent with our concern that lower income people should not bear the cost of the new system. It's a very elaborate system. From day one, as you'll recall, Janine, our committee then was worried about what the consequences. We've seen it before, Janine. Every time we introduce very good legislation, well, not every time, most times we introduce very good legislation and their cost to bear. Who bears the cost, right? Either the state or the lower income people disproportionately. But I don't know, what we do about it. I don't have an answer. Maybe the researchers and content advisors will help us before we vote on this bill. And maybe they want to think about that. That's one issue I'm raising with them. Okay. I don't have anything more to say. Anybody else? Nope. Okay. Next one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then the second comment is that Strait submits that the levy for the associating clearinghouses should be treated similarly to that of a trade repository with a fixed maximum of 500,000 and 100,000 rand for each of the FSCA and the PA respectively. The comments, the response provided is that the authorities do not agree to the proposal by Strait to have a fixed amount charged on an associated clearinghouse. The annual maximum for an associated clearinghouse has been reduced from 5 million rand to 2 million rand. So the regulators view that that maximum that has been set for an associated clearinghouse is appropriate for the nature of the regulation and supervision of that activity. I see Honorable Ryder has a hand up.
Thank you. I see you taking over chairing, very helpful, Janine. Okay. Nah, Janine, I don't mind, man. It's good. I haven't seen his hand up. Okay, right. Good. No, Janine, I'm teasing you. Go for it.
Thanks very much, Chair. Again, the fact that you were able to, following a complaint, reduced from 5 million to 2 million, the levy placed in the automated clearinghouse, is an indicator that these charges are pretty much a thumbsuck. It's not really based on cost. And I hear what you said about the fact that, you chose not to drop it right down to 500,000 because of the costs associated with the regulation. But the fact that you went in at 5 million and then you were able to reduce it to 2 means that there hasn't really been a scientific or a, perhaps even a fair way of calculating. Normally a levy is based on costs. And this is what bothers me. And keeping costs to a minimum of the regulator, what is a minimum? Because perhaps the head of the unit wants to drive a Ferrari instead of driving a Porsche, but that additional cost, that's the minimum. It's very loose and unscientific, and it just gives so much scope across the regulator to kind of run things as they want. Chair, and I hear what Treasury is saying, and I think Mr. Davidson said that you know, we're not going to avoid the cost of regulation. There will be a cost of regulation. I share the sentiments that you mentioned earlier about the fact that these costs are going to be passed directly onto the consumer. And this is the point that I made at the last time. I do see that you know, this is reasonably unavoidable. But, Chair, I think that it is incumbent on us as the NCLP, who invariably end up looking at the impacts of legislation. I think it's, you know, as much as I think that this legislation will pass, I believe that we need to review this in a year's time and see what the practical impact has been. You know, we did speak last time and I asked if modelling had been done of the cost per institution, and there was a comment that yes, the modelling has been done. So I think we will need to review after a year, you know, how much has the cost of banking gone up as a result of these this regulation charge. So yeah, I'm just saying this is very unscientific, and that last comment just confirms it for me. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, can I just say, National Treasury, that from a slightly different angle, but overlapping a lot with what Dennis says, I don't agree with everything he says, but the basic thrust of what he says is congruent with what I'm saying. First of all, I was a bit taken aback, right, that you dropped it from 5 million to 2 million. And the first thing that struck me is it's a big leap, right? It's a big change. So it makes one lose confidence. At least that's how it occurred to me before Dennis put it in a different way, which is overlapping substantially what I'm saying, I suppose. Like, it makes me wonder, like, how can you drop something from 5 million to 2 million and look at what Strait is offering? You know, like, look at that figure, 500,000 and 100,000. Firstly, can you tell me a bit more about Strait, really? Why do they take these positions? It may make more sense to us if we knew exactly what their role is. And maybe the rationale for them feeling the way they... I mean, I know you spelled it out here, but it's important to know what their role is. But secondly, it is remarkable, colleagues from Treasury, that you dropped it from 5 million. It's like knowing you'll drop it from 5 million to knowing you, Treasury, the way you are. Not that I'm complaining. Treasuries are like this all over the world, presumably, or most parts of the world. You know, you'll drop it by maybe 5 to 4.5, and then you'll get pushed by the committees, and you may drop it to 4, but a leap from 5 million to 2 million is quite remarkable. Now, whether it is all unscientific and all, that's the area in which I may disagree with Dennis, but Dennis is entirely correct to ask that question. He raised it the last time, and you spoke about the modeling. I also like Dennis is very much in tune with what we have been doing in Parliament since the Municipal Systems Bill, but the fact of the matter is it never seems to work as properly as it should, because invariably when you go from one term to another, certainly in the majority party, there's a wholesale change in the members. So nobody follows up, though they get an exit report, that these are annual reviews we have to do. I really like what you're saying, Dennis. In fact, if you hadn't gone that far, I would have told you, well, give me an answer, give the committee an answer, and let's engage the NA colleagues in effect, and so on, if we have to. But you offered a good answer, actually. I would probably have come round to it, Dennis. Not now, when I start working with the staff on a report. But you are making it very easy for us. I do think this has to happen. But remember, we have to persuade our NA colleagues. There's a 795 bill section, but what I'm saying is, you know what? Although we can do what you're saying, Dennis, practically, because it's a 75 bill, right? Not that we can't do it. Yeah, we can, but it carries more weight if the NA does it too. So we do, as our secretary does, refer our reports to them. I engage with the chair again and the whip on that side. So I think there's a good way forward, because as you were edging towards finishing, I was wondering, what can we do? I'm agreeing with you, but now what are we going to do here? Because, you see, what would be the point? You see, here it is where Parliament is weak overall. I'm not commenting on the current staff we have. If we had the staff that we need, we would then look at the modeling exercise and do further modeling of our own based on our own scientific evidence and draw on external experts. As we did on previous bills, in those days, let me tell you, colleagues, All we had to do is approach Speaker Premier Jinwala and say, you know, those days we didn't have content advisors and we didn't have like a dedicated researchers per committee. I can tell you, we drew in Wits University on the municipal structures built at the time and the municipal systems built. And they were excellent. They were former UDF activists mainly, who also were involved personally in local government. It was just wonderful. They advised the white paper, some of them, but we said to them, now you're serving us. Forget the white papers, treasuries, what was it, Department of Provincial and Local Government Affairs, as it was called in the first 5-year term, I think. So you see, Dennis, you're right. You're doing your job as an MP. Now, I have tried since 1998, Dennis. That was thousands of years ago. And they to get more staff and, you know, the same matching staff as the departments have. And to pay the same salaries that the departments pay. And I've lost out, as have other old committee chairs. None of them is around. But what I will say to you is in those days, we did get funding for external support. The last time we got it was with the Child Justice Act, I think. Yeah. But the Parliament stopped it because they said, you have full-time staff now. You have dedicated research and a content, which to be fair to them. Let's look at tax, okay, Dennis and others. Can we match Treasury and SARS on tax? No. Antonia Manamela on that side is actually an expert on tax, but the greatest of respect to her. She was in SARS, I think, or Treasury. She's very good, but she can't match the team of Treasury and the experience. They travel all over the world and they look at other, they attend these conferences. So again and again, we come back. How are we? You see, like the Zondo Commission is correct to say overall that we don't fulfill our oversight. Well, insofar as political will is concerned, it's debatable, but it's credible. But, you know, what's not fully appreciated is the staff that you need to match the uneven or the lack of balance between the executive and parliament. In fact, parliament should have more staff and maybe better paid staff, if it has to be, than the executive, because the power ultimately is with us, not with the executive. Anyway, I'm sorry to rave and rant, but my term is about to end if I survive for another 18 months, okay? So I'm leaving this for the next generation of MPs. We should never give up on this fight, really. It's just not right. You know, I'll tell you one final thing that really upsets me at the existential and political level. I read the bill, right? And man, it's so technical and so boring. I'm telling you, it's a very boring bill. It's not intellectually or politically stimulating. And I can fall asleep yesterday and get up again and get distracted with the TV. This is not like the municipal systems bill. You know, it's like an exciting bill. You can even manage our technical stuff. This is a very technical bill. And how do we decide? How do we decide what's right and what's wrong short of our own model? And how do we decide, you know, in one, two sittings that, oh, we've done our job? So there are bigger issues here. The next year, where's in Jadu and Mama Rafale and all? This is for you, mainly, and also people like Dennis. I'm sorry to go on, but hell, Benny, sorry, wrong word. What? I don't know what the word is. In Kulileko, somebody replaced the word hell with an appropriate term. You know what? This is not fair. Not fair on us, really. But it's over to the next generation. Right, let's move on. Sorry, as a chair, you have some license, but really, I'm signaling to you, I'm not happy with how we're going to process this book, really. I don't feel comfortable with the role we are playing here. But there we are. Let's move on to the next one. Tell us first. Oh, no, let's settle this. What street now? Who's going to start? Janine, straight. What street first, and then deal with the issues that Dennis and I are raising.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Could I perhaps ask colleagues from the FSCA to please come in a bit and provide a bit more detail about STRAIT, and then also subsequently the manner in which the particular levies for the Associated Clearinghouse and other categories that STRAIT is referring to have been determined, and also explaining, you know, why there were some adjustments made to the levies, but, you know, in different drafts of the bill. Could perhaps Rita come in on straight, who straight is, and then also maybe Paul and Belina on the formulation of the levies?
Good morning, honorable members. I think from FSCA, I'm not sure if Rieta is struggling to connect from her side. But in terms of, we have like followed that is the engagement in terms of the decrease in terms of the levies that we initially like proposed. So in a nutshell, to have like members comfortable with the numbers that we are presenting, we did have like detailed budgets in terms of getting to the numbers that will enable us to run efficiently and effectively as FSCA and the Prudential Authority. So that was informed by the organograms or the structures that we planned in terms of us operating. That is our operating model. So in terms of I hear honorable members in terms of saying that was it scientific? Is it not scientific? The reliance, because it's a fairly new concept, it's a fairly new model of regulation. The reliance was on the basis that these are the activities that we're going to be engaged in, and these are the resources that we're going to be needing, like in terms of our IT infrastructure, which we costed to the last, and we then had the resources that we're going to need in terms of the new model that we're going to be applying in the industry. So the type of resources or the type of the skills that you're going to be needing. So in terms of our overall cost base, because I think the key here is to say that we are not profit driven, it's purely on a cost recovery basis. And on following that principle that is purely on a recovery basis, we have ensured that the structure that we come up with, SFSCA and the PA, it's efficient and then it's effective. In terms of the drop, in terms of the clearing houses, we have looked at the activities to say which activity is going to be requiring more resources in terms of us regulating. So on that basis, between ourselves and the PASFSCA, we have looked at those activities, and surely I can maybe say to the honorable members that it's definitely a calculations or, like I said, a model that we have really applied our minds in terms of coming up with these numbers. At the end of the day, I think we have presented it before to say that from the FSCA side, I think we presented that we're going to be running in the first year, we're going to be running a deficit of 18 million. So all those variables that we have considered to say first year, yes, we're going to have a deficit. Second year, we will almost break even. And then the third year, we will definitely be aligned. And then in the third year, that's when we will be certain in terms of the cost base. Everything would have been up and running 100% operational. And I think honorable members have been saying that maybe over the medium term, we will then be in a clear position to see exactly if what we have proposed to the members and to the FSP is definitely working. But I once more assure the honorable members that we definitely have looked at these numbers, and it was purely on activity based and the type of resources that we're going to be needing. I'm not too sure if Rieta from the FSCA would be in a position to add. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Is somebody coming in?
It seems Rita might be having a little bit of... Oh, I see Rita's coming in now. Please go ahead, Rita.
Thank you, Chair, and apologies for my background. I had to move. My internet is a bit unstable this morning. Yeah, maybe just, Chair, in response to your question on STRATE itself and the functions it performed. So, you know, it is the only, well, it's one of two, but the only operating CSD, Central Securities Depository, in the country. So it fulfills a very, very important function, and therefore its regulation is very important. And then the functions as an associated clearinghouse, which, as the name suggests, is a license that that somebody that's already licensed as a market infrastructure can obtain. So there is a bit of overlap in the functionality of the two types of market infrastructures. And therefore, you know, when we re-looked and we listened to the complaint, we were able to reduce that levy, and I think other adjustments, as I think Paul explained, were made in the budget to enable us to do that. I hope that answers the question, Chair.
Okay. Any comments from anybody in response to the replies we've received? Dennis, yes, go for it.
Chair, that was I'm not sure that you're any clearer than you were, Chair, but Straits is essentially a joint operation set up by the banks that clears the transactions between the banks at the end of the day. So all the interbank transactions that are done, Straits is the one that processes all of those at the end of the day. Exactly what it says, ACH, automated clearinghouse, and it closes out all those transactions so that the banks can balance their books.
Okay, thanks for that, Dennis. In response to your overall reply, they have taken my personal understanding, I can't speak for others, slightly forward, but, you know, it's not, would you expect, convincing enough, but you know what, I don't have a way forward. I don't know, given some of the earlier comments I've made, how we go forward unless somebody comes with some proposal from the committee, firstly. Secondly, I'm not sure how to assess what is being said. Because I don't have like a benchmark or a technical sort of knowledge. As I said, unless we did our own modeling exercise and we look carefully at what you said independently as Parliament, I don't know what I'm supposed to do as a politician, really. You know, I mean, if you're talking about modeling, I've never hidden this. Somebody once told me I'm proud of it because I keep saying, I've got an E for maths and an E for science in the trick. I have no experience of like finances, having worked in a bank or, you know, having been an insurance agent or studied these things and so on. I'm basically a local government activist, if you want to know, before 1990. So, you know, I did indicate to Parliament, hey, you got the wrong guy here to chair finance in 2014. And there were others in the committee who were more equipped, they served in, so on. But that's how the party decides. So I have to do what I have to do, which is take my deployment as it comes. You can't choose your own deployment. So there are other people in committee last term and this term who are better equipped technically than I am. I said, yeah, I've never hidden that and withdrawn. So Dennis, you serving a role that some of your colleagues did the previous term, and we never hesitated to use the, we may disagree with them, but you know, they bring value to the committee as you are doing, Dennis. So thanks for that, Dennis. And I don't know what to say. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm not convinced, but I don't have a concrete alternative. So what do I do? I can't do anything as a chair unless somebody comes up with an alternative. But you have taken us some way forward in our understanding, even if, you know, we're unable to say what the ultimate value of what you're saying is for practical, meaning. But what we have agreed, and we're alerting the support staff, is I think you're right, Dennis, that we should look at the effect of these levies. The usual argument, Dennis, often from the departments, it's too soon in a year to tell that by the time the, you know, act is enacted, the bill is enacted as a law and starts getting implemented. So I think we should make it an annual thing, Dennis, starting with a progress report. Now, the Inkululeko, your job is to ensure that you check together with the content advisor what date the law is promulgated. And when we draft the report, it'll be a year from them. And whatever happens, even if the skies fall down, let's get them around that time to report back. In Kululeko, are we agreed? It's going into the minutes, right?
No, Chairperson.
Yeah, you are the content advisor, to sort this out. Okay, good. Let's move on. Next one, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. So the next comment, it is somewhat similar to the top comment that was made by Strait. And it says that given only one entity will be prudentially reviewed, Strait is of the view that only one levy should be payable, regardless of the fact that the entity carries two licenses. And the response is that Strait will be charged separate levies for its activities as a central securities depository, that's holding the securities, so that then it's an important mechanism for facilitating the transfer of securities in the financial market system, and an associated clearinghouse, which is an important...
Jenny?
Yes? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Jenny.
Oh, okay. No, thank
you. You've been cracking. Can you just cover... Now we can hear you. I don't think that you said anything substantially different. You embellished what's said here. But still, after your first sentence, just quickly summarize what you said. After your first sentence, we began to lose you. But now you are clear. Can you remember what you said?
Yes. So the two different activities of a central securities depository, which is holding the securities, which is an important function, so that then the transfer of transactions in relation to securities can be easily facilitated. And then the function of the associated clearinghouse, which clears the transactions in the securities, are supervised accordingly. So there are distinct activities and they're supervised as distinct activities. And so different activities, when performed by a single entity, are licensed, regulated, and supervised separately. And that's the principle on which generally the imposition of the levies is based, that for all of the different activities that different financial institutions might be performing, they might be performing multiple activities, they're regulated in relation to each of those activities and supervised, and so then that is why there are levies for the different activities. So that is the completion of the summary of the key comments that were received. And then we can just summarize briefly the outcome of the
study. Yeah, but let's just deal. Yeah. Before we go there, is there anybody else who anybody wants to comment on this submission? Now, I see, Dennis, you put on the chat group something about, let's see what it says, stakeholders. Yeah, that follows. But you know what? We can just add it to the report. Sometimes, Dennis, what we do is we don't invite stakeholders because it's really our function just to see how things are being implemented. And what happens with stakeholders, they come back and they rehash their old arguments. So, you know, and we don't have to have a public hearing. What we can do is, for the first time round, at least, is get a report from Treasury on progress and its effect, as you said, how these things are panning out in practice, these levies, and then make it available to the stakeholders and ask them to comment on it without having an oral hearing. But if we think strongly enough, there's a need for an oral hearing, nothing stops us from doing so then. Okay, so in the wording of the report on recommendations, Esther, in Kululeko and the rest, please ensure you appropriately cover that. Thank you. Okay, I see there's no hand up, so I take it that we're moving on. Okay, now can you go on, please, to 36?
Thank you very
much.
Here's
your overall sub-themes. Yeah, you're dealing here with those sub-themes of the overall submission of the impact cost. We've covered that, yeah. Next one.
So would you like me to go through this slide, or are you...
No, okay, let me quickly go through it because then I can guide the meeting. And the meeting is obviously the final decision maker on what we look at. Look, the first one is straightforward. We just covered that, right? Then it's Treasury was instructed by the committee to provide a comprehensive report, right? It's the same issue that Treasury raised, Dennis. I mean, Scott raised with Treasury, right? Then you did to the committee propose amendment to deliver the cost. You covered that. Benefits of finance. Yeah, well, that you've said to us. High-level summary of the socioeconomic impact assessment on the proposed levy. Now, this high-level summary of the social impact assessment, have we got it in Nkululeko? Is it part of our... Because I didn't see this. Have we got a copy of this? In Nkululeko, are you there?
I'm like an HR person. I didn't get that.
You see, at the very bottom, the bullet point, a high-level summary of the socioeconomic impact assessment, right? Have we got a copy of that?
No, Chairperson, I didn't receive this.
All right, Treasury, can you give us a copy of that, please? Okay, the next slide, please. Can we have it by this afternoon, please? Thank you. Next slide. These are the amendments you made, right?
But yes, these are the amendments that were adopted.
Yeah. So, colleagues, this will be covered when we look at the bill, because the bill, as it now appears, has got all these changes made, taking into account the policy issues that you responded to earlier. Am I right? Is that it?
Was
I too far? Yeah. So in other words, what I'm saying is we have discussed the policy issues that were raised by stakeholders and the committee on the other side, and you have responded your take on it. And then what you're saying to us now is therefore you made these changes based on your response and the committee's agreement, the SCOF committee's agreement with what you said. Now, I'm saying to colleagues, we're going through it clause by clause. Do you really want to look at each of these clauses when they're in the bill anyway? All we have to do is check to what extent the bill reflects the policy decisions that we have discussed today. So do people want to go through the slide or are you prepared to forego it? Anybody? Everybody, what have you to say? Nobody's got a view. Oh, right. Well, my view is that, and I know somebody is disagreeing. Presumably, we're going forward and skipping this section because we're going to do it now with a clause by clause. Right. Nobody's coming up and calling left. Am I right?
No, agreed. Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh, good. Now, this slide, let me tell you, was immensely irritating for somebody like me. Right, because it's very hard to, Janine, you think if you didn't do all the degrees you did and training you did and sat for 25 hours a day, 8 days a week in Treasury, you'll understand this. You think it's expected of somebody with an E in math and an E in science to understand this? I take it the staff have looked at this carefully and they've approved of it. So we take it, because if they didn't, their job was to alert us to this, right? So I take it the staff has agreed, so I will move on. Right, good, thank you. Let's go to the bill, colleagues. You've got both the bills. We'll deal with the first bill, obviously, and then the administration bill. Right, so that's where we're going now. And we ain't rushing anything. We don't finish today. We shall continue next week. We just do our job to the extent we are able to. Right, now I have to go into, you know, I'm not very sophisticated, by the way, now to get to a PDF. Right. Here we are. Just give me a moment. Oh, you got the bill on the screen. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we're looking at, here we are. Oh, those schedules were a nightmare, Bukile. They were a nightmare. Right. Right, Bukile and your team, colleagues, I read this morning, right, this preamble. It's a nice preamble, I must say, very well written, eh? Very well put together. So is there any comments on the preamble, colleagues? It's a really nice preamble, I must say, from my side. Is it okay to ask who drafted this bill? Or those things, like I'm sure I'm entitled to it, but you know, it's a very nicely written, clear preamble. Whoever does preamble, please congratulate them from my side. It's very well done.
That's the colleagues in the tax legal design department. I think they contributed this part. We worked with them on drafting the bill.
Yeah, well, tell them we like this. Well, not we. I don't know what the other members speak. I don't know what's going on in their minds, but I can tell you what's going on in mine. I really like this when I read this. Very well crafted.
I agree with you, Chairperson.
Thanks, my sister. Although, you know me, I'm only using Chris's. The end I would put after the act there. But hey, you know what? It's fine. You know, colleagues, I haven't got time. I can share with you some things that we had to fight. We had to actually fight to get them to change their style. Eh? Hey, especially that Department of Provincial Government. Everything, if you moved a comma, that wonderful DDG, I really like him. Does anybody know him? Chippy Olha. Oh man, you know, colleagues, if you said no, the comma is really not there.
Chairperson, I agree with you.
Yeah, no thanks. Sir.
I agree with you, Chairperson.
Right, so no, I'm talking about now Chippy Olha and them. If you made a change, hey, one comma you take out, they will fight it. You know, the comma is necessary, and then we all have to fight with them. Those were the days. All right, let's move on. There's no comment there, and Mama Rakhane agrees it's very well crafted. So we move on to definitions, and oh, the rest, that's basically setting out what's in the bill, right? So that's straightforward. Okay, so we go to page 3. And I went through all of this again, colleagues. I couldn't see anything, but let's see if anybody picks up things. So, Janine, at this stage, we're not going to ask you to go through these clauses. We'll ask you when we get to the content. So I'm just going to, as a chair, raise these things formally. Remember, we are processing the bill informally at the moment. Nobody is prevented by next week or whenever before we're finalizing the bill. If you look at it again and you pick up words that are missing or cross-referencing. I didn't get enough time to do cross-referencing. So can I ask the content advisor, please, to check all the cross-referencing and report back to us in a written thing to say all the cross-referencing is okay or they aren't. So that's Esther and Inkulileko and you can rope in Poppy. Can you please do the cross-referencing? Okay, and check that everything's right. So, and that must be done by Monday next week. Can you just send me the chair's note to say you've done it? And then I will raise it in the committee, or you can raise it in the committee if you like. Right. So, okay. So on Associate Clearinghouse, any comments? Please interject, right? I'm not going to look on the screen all the time. But to save time, you just come in and say, you know, what you want to say. Members? Okay. So bank is straightforward, right? I cannot tell, you know, whether it's the relevant Section 1.1 of the Banks Act, right? I don't have it here before me. These are things that the committee staff must do, right? So they must check whether it's not 1.2 or 2.1. Okay, central counterparty. Oh man, this term took up so much of our time in the last term of Parliament. I can't see anything there. Members, I'm going through it fast. I take it because they're technical terms. Unless the committee staff come back to us to say there's something irregular here, we as members of parliament will do our job and deal with the policy issues. They must do their job and check all this. Central Securities Depository is fine as far as I know. Collective investment scheme in a hedge fund. I think it's fine. Collective investment scheme in participation bonds. I think it's fine. Collective investment scheme in property, collective investment scheme in securities, cooperative bank, means, covered deposit, credit rating agency, deposit insurance levy, means the levy imposed on Section 9.1. I didn't cross-reference, eh, Esther? I just took it. It's correct. Please do that. Exchange means an exchange as defined in Section 1.1 of the Financial Markets Act. Right, financial, obviously the first of the Act, Financial Sector Financial Sector Regulation Act. Oh my God, that took up months of our time. Financial Services Provider. Yes, that's in the old Act. Foreign Collective Investment Scheme. This gave us a headache as well. Independent Clearing House. Insurance Act, obviously the one we passed. Insurer, levy period, levy year. Yeah, I checked this thing. This levy period is basically each quarter, isn't it? Life insurer, obviously, Lloyd's, oh yeah, of course, don't we know, member. I'm just amazed that Lloyd's has still had such a powerful influence globally. People move on us anyway. Mutual bank, non-life insurer, occupational fund, office of the ombud for financial services provider. What a clumsy term, eh? Ombuds office. Or financial services providers ombuds office. Anyway, fine. Office of the pension fund adjudicator, funds over the counter derivative provider, pension fund administration, pension fund preservation fund, provident preservation fund, reinsurer, representative, retirement annuity fund, road accident fund, special levy, supervised entity, trade depository. The sub 2 and sub 3 are the standard ones, right? They're exactly what you find in most books. Okay, now let's go to impositions of levies, right? Now here, it is in accordance with section 321, sub 2. It is in accordance with section 8. So I just take these cross-referencing. Okay, imposition of levies, any point? Nope. Okay. Supervised entity subject to financial sector levy. Any comments here on clause 3? No. Clause 4. Right. On 4.1. A and B. 4.1. Any comments? No. 4.2. Four sub three. Four sub A. Four sub B. Four sub C. Sub 5, sub 6, yeah, this is levy year, levy period, straightforward, apportionment, yeah, I did this last night and part of it today. I think I got up to section 8 last night and did the rest this morning, so it's fresh in my mind, but I don't know if other members pick up things that I don't see. And the staff. The staff, if you've got content advisors in particular, if you've got any issues, please forward it to me by WhatsApp or raise it yourself. Okay, on special levy 8.1, 8.2a and sub B as well. Look, section 9 is straightforward as far as I remember. This I read this morning. So if anyone's got anything on clause 9? No. Then we go to amendment of schedules. On this one too, it's pretty straightforward. We just got to look for our own role, right? So let's start with, now here, can you help us, Janine? Can you take over here, please, and point to our specific role as Parliament in respect of the amendments of schedules?
Thank you very much, Chair. In this section, particularly, it seeks to enable a relatively efficient process to enable the amendment of schedules to the Act, to the bill, in a slightly more efficient manner, perhaps, than having to have a full, amendment bill process, because it is necessary to have, to make adjustments to the schedules from time to time to perhaps, as is set out in subsection 2, it may be, there needs to be adjustments to levies as a result of the annual levies proposals that will be done each year. It may be necessary to clarify the meaning of some terms used in a schedule or to enable it to, there may be new entities that become a supervised entity over time, which may currently not be falling under the regulatory framework, so these schedules would need to be adjusted, and then also, you know, to allow these schedules to align with the other legislation that set out categories of entities and activities that fall under the regulatory framework. We will be seeing this with the Conduct of Financial Institutions Act. And also over time with other legislation, there may be new types of entities that become regulated in the financial sector. And so it is will be necessary from time to time to amend the schedules. And so this section seeks to provide for that. And so the process that's provided for is to allow for a period of comment for at least 30 days before the minister submits an amended schedules to Parliament. And so that was inserted also to clarify this process. This was inserted by the Standing Committee in its deliberations. It was recommended to insert that, and we proposed that in response to comments received. And so then Parliament then can proceed to consider the schedules, and then so ultimately the amendment process is Parliament has a strong approval process role in relation to amendments to the schedules, and they can hold public hearings and et cetera regarding the proposed amendments, in addition to the public hearings that or comments process that would have been undertaken prior to the amendment to the schedule, prior to submitting the schedules to Parliament. And then, you know, once Parliament approves the schedules, then or may amend them or recommend or maybe even reject the schedules, then you know, if it's approved by Parliament ultimately and or maybe with some amendments, then it would be then published in the Gazette, and it would take force. The amended schedules would come into effect on that date. And so the types of amendments that may be made to the schedules are set out, and then now there is if there is an amendment that would be less than a specified amount, which is basically the cost CPIX determination for the previous year, then it wouldn't necessarily be having to come back to Parliament to amend the schedules for that purpose. But other adjustments and adjustments higher than the consumer price index would need to be amended and approved by Parliament. And so that's basically okay. The process there. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Comments? Yeah, I see Dennis's hand is up.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, normally when we speak about syntax in this committee, it's about smoking and drinking. But just if we can go back to right up to the top of 10, I think it's 10.1b that I wanted to have a quick look at.
Yeah, okay. Parliament will approve, adopt amendments, or reject an amendment within 3 months.
Yeah. It just doesn't really make a lot of sense to say Parliament must approve, comma, adopt. Approve and adopt, approve or adopt, approve slash adopt. Again, it really is just it's perhaps pedantic, but obviously these things, because as you said, you know, what is Parliament's role here? Must we approve or must we adopt?
Just to come in on that.
Well, Janine, there are two separate options, aren't they, Janine?
Well,
the one is to approve of it. Can I ask the question so then you can reply? It's a bit hard to answer a question if you don't know what it is. So I'm asking you a question. Is this meant to mean that you have three options, right? You can approve, or you can reject, or you can adopt amendments, right? So approve and adopt are meaning two different things. Approve means like unconditionally accept. Adopt amendments means, well, you're changing it, or you can reject the entire proposal. Is that not, there are only three options there, not two. There's not an overlap between approve and adopt. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair. That's the intended meaning, and there would be the three options for Parliament. Yes.
Okay. So in that case, Dennis, I can see the confusion. I wouldn't write it like that personally. But you see, if it's such a minor thing, Dennis, do you really want to make an amendment to clarify? It's going to go back on that side. But if you want to, nothing's stopping you because you give it clearer. I see what you're saying. But this is, unfortunately, Dennis, I don't like the way they word bills at times, but this has been tradition and sometimes you just give up. They've been doing this. This is a typical, you'll find this wording in many other bills as well. It's like this. Parliament has approved. That means approve. They should either say approve the schedule or adopt amendments to or reject. That's how I would say it. Then they say, no, but that's colloquialism. So Dennis, good luck to your generation. You'll see, to get these people's stage is so hard. Eh? I mean, really, you know, people don't talk like that. I've been fighting. Willie Hofmeyr started this whole thing. That's why our constitution is so beautifully done. So simple. You know, even a four-year-old could read it, right? So, you know, what I'm saying is, I think let it pass.
Sure, I'll get that, Chair. It's just Parliament must approve. Adopt,
yeah, I know you're reject. Right. You're right. I know where you are.
Approve, adopt, or reject yeah. amendments to, but whatever. No, look, I mean, yeah, as you say, it's a very minor thing. Good luck.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Dennis, you are going back to 1998. That's what we did with the municipal structures, most positively written. And some of the municipal systems, though, we really fought them, you know, and we won most of the things. Sometimes we just say it's not worth it. Now, if you're on that side, if you're on the Scott side, you would have changed it the way you want it. It's clearer. But there is an issue here that I need to alert members to where we let ourselves down as Parliament. So we demanded all these things in the municipal systems bill, right? And you know what? Most of us got changed, right? After we passed the bill, not too long after that, most of us got moved. And anyway, when we were there, because we had like 3.5 years, when we were there, we kept saying, no, we were one of the first committees to do this, by the way. We said, you know what? I think I raised this before. What ministers and departments used to do, where they lost out on a committee. That's why I call my colleagues. We must be careful about this. When ministers lost out or departments lost out, those days used to completely rewrite bills, right? You know, they were very transformative and new bills, and you could really take things very far there. They're not minor amendments or within the same policy framework, so a new policy framework. So we introduced this thing that every major amendment through regulation that a minister made, it was Mufamadi at the time, but any minister, has to be submitted to Parliament. And then we said a similar clause to this. They said, yeah, but if we bring all these to you, when are you going to have the time to do it, right? So we said, fine, we will 3 months or 6 weeks or a month. And if we don't respond, then it's actually understood to mean Treasury, the department concerned can go ahead. Let me tell you, other committees have also done it. All other committees have also done it. And most, half the time, Parliament actually doesn't get its act together. Committees don't actually consider it, and then it gets adopted as a regulation. And sometimes it can be quite substantial leap of interpretation. Because remember, no regulation by a minister or department and or, you know, can deviate or fall outside the framework of the policy set out overall in an act, okay? But sometimes you can interpret a clause in such a way that you can get away with murder, so to speak. So I'm just saying we've got all this here. I hope the two committees will actually do it, given our heavy load and given on our side that we have the same committee serving both sides. I hope this happens. But I agree with the government, the executive, that if Parliament fails to deliver on what it itself asked for, like in this case, Janine saying Scofford insisted on some of these provisions that allow parliamentary oversight, then it's our problem, not the executive. But I think it's important we insert this thing because amendments to schedules and regulation must be considered except if they're minor. Like, for example, sometimes the way we do it, colleagues, is we do the clause in such a way that the ability of a minister or a department to move, maneuver, and move very far from where the original intent was of clause is limited. In that case, you don't have to have oversight over it. But in this case, given the questions you, Dennis, in particular, have raised, and also raised by Skoff and the rest of us who have been exposed to bills like this, I think require this sort of thing. We can't just let the minister or the department get away. All right. So is there anything else you want to raise, Dennis, or anyone else on this? Overall, I read all of this morning, actually, and I thought it's fine. The only concern is the practicality. Will we do what we asked for and or the Treasury said we should do as part of it? Anything there? Nope. All right. Let's go on to 11. This is the one that interests you, Dennis, a lot, and the committee. Exemptions from levies.
Thank you, Chair. So this provision allows the regulators either in writing on an application by a supervised entity or on its own initiative, and that phrase was inserted in the National Assembly on the recommendation of the committee after the public hearings on the bills. It can then grant an exemption to a supervised entity, and also not just to a single entity, but potentially to a type or category of supervised entity, from the payment of all or part of a financial sector levy. So then also the wording, a type or category of supervised entities, was also included in the National Assembly. So this widened the scope of the type of exemptions that could be granted, and also it allows the regulators to grant exemptions potentially on their own initiative. So this allows much more flexibility in relation to the potential granting of exemptions.
Okay, Jane, just 1 second. Members, you can intervene on each clause and sub-clause, okay? Like Dennis, the last time you should have just intervened. Remember, you don't wait for her to finish, because we're not doing policy issues. What we're doing is clause by clause and checking whether it's consistent with the policy issues. So you can intervene with a sub-clause or a clause, please, colleagues. Right, go ahead. Jenny,
thank
go
you.
Ahead, please.
So paragraph A provides this for the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. Paragraph B provides similarly for the Prudential Authority.
And
C provides for the Deposit Insurance Corporation in relation to the deposit insurance levies. And then subclause 2 provides that that a supervised entity would need to provide requested information or must apply in the form and in the manner that's determined by the regulators, make the application if they make an application. And then subsection 3 sets out the matters, the considerations that guide the granting of exemptions and when the regulators may grant exemptions. So it needs to satisfy one of these criteria in subsection 3. So to potentially alleviate hardship or prejudice to the supervised entity, that it must not be contrary to the public interest by granting the exemption, and it must be promote developmental financial inclusion and transformation objectives, and also other reasons that may contribute to the achievement of the objects of the Financial Sector Regulation Act as a whole. And also it may be necessary to facilitate the affordability of the financial sector levy or the special levy for the supervised entity. So promoting affordability is an important consideration, but also, these other factors must also be taken into consideration when granting exemptions. So there isn't a completely unfettered discretion on the regulators to grant exemptions. And all exemptions that are granted, it must be published that exemptions have been granted in the particular cases. So that's clause 11.
Right. Now, any comments here? None? I don't see any hand up. Can we move on to the allocation of amounts, ladies?
So this clause, it provides for how the levies that are collected are then must be allocated to the different bodies that will be receiving the levies, because the Financial Sector Conduct Authority is collecting the levy, will be collecting the levies that are provided for the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, but then also for the Financial Sector Tribunal, the Ombud Council, and the Office of the Pension Funds Adjudicator, and the Office of Financial Services Providers. So the Financial Sector Conduct Authority will then have to allocate the appropriate amounts of levies that are collected and particularly distribute them to the tribunal, the Ombud Council, and the statutory ombuds, the Pension Funds Adjudicator and the FASE Ombud. And then in relation to the Reserve Bank, it will be collecting the levies on behalf of the Prudential Authority. And so then the Reserve Bank will then need to allocate the funds, collect the levies collected to the Prudential Authority. Then subsection 3 then provides sort of a similar process for the allocation of the special levies and how that's determined. And then subsection 4 then addresses the deposit insurance levies allocated, but they will be collected by the Reserve Bank and allocated to the corporation. Then subsection 5 deals with how interest on the unpaid levies amounts would be determined, and then how those would then be also allocated to the different financial sector bodies that are receiving the levies. So that's basically what clause 12 covers.
Right. So I was looking through the tables. This is really easy to follow. I just started looking at the tables again as you're speaking. I don't have any issues here. Does anybody else? Nope. Short title and comments been straightforward. Can we move on then to the horrible schedules right now? And this is so crucial because it's giving me, so to speak, to the rest of the table application, for what I can see, A to Q is fine. We can skip that. Alleviation of double levy payment respect of clearinghouse. Right, explain this. I think I follow this, but go ahead.
Thank you very much. This deals with a specific instance where there might be what's currently referred to as a clearinghouse that has been approved in terms of the specific section referred to in the Financial Markets Act to also perform the functions of a central counterparty or the functions of a licensed independent clearinghouse. Those are two types of entities that are defined in the Financial Markets Act, and who is also at the same time licensed as a central counterparty, would only need to pay the license applicable to a central counterparty, but would not also have to pay the levy applicable to an associated clearinghouse or an independent clearinghouse. And this relates specifically that some of the clearinghouses, they are performing the other functions and they may be applying also to perform other functions. So this is to avoid some duplication of levy payments in those specific instances.
Okay, on this one, colleagues, is there any comments? I don't see any hand up. Okay, let's go to 3.
So item 3 provides for levy and payments in respect of reinsurers. And so if a reinsurer is effectively licensed only to perform non-life insurance business, it would pay the levy for that is applicable for non-life insurers. And if it's providing life insurance business, it would pay the levy for a life insurer. And if it's performing both life insurance business and non-life insurance business, it would pay levies both for the life insurance business and non-life insurance business.
Okay. All right, thank you. Now, there is there any comment? Now, this is where I must say, Janine and Treasury and colleagues, this is where I got lost, right? I mean, it's very hard to make sense of this. So, Janine, can you take us through this quickly from beginning to end, from page 50, what is it, page? This is when I said it's a nightmare now. Now, here, can we plead with a content advisor? And we mandate, you know, we've done this before where there are some issues like this. We did it in the past term. Janine Vukile must be made fully available to Esther and the team. Esther will coordinate on the issues that are required to finalize this bill. These are things that will require the content advisor's help with the team. She can draw in Poppy and in Koleko and so on. So from page 11 onwards, we will need the offline, you know, outside of the meeting if need be. If our team doesn't understand anything, they will phone Vikile. You can give in Koleko the person to contact. Is it you or Janine or whoever who will deal directly? We've done this before, as you all know, Janine. So let's get this done because this is very, very unfair to the average MP. We really cannot be expected to know how to make sense of the usefulness of this. Maybe Dennis, if you want to be involved, we can mandate you. You want to be involved in some way, Dennis?
Chair, no, I'm not a fan of inflicting pain on myself unnecessarily.
I thought you might get away. I might get away by inflicting this on you. I am unashamed to be saying this, Dennis. I don't care who listens to this, if it's in Bolivia or Mongolia, I'm not apologizing for this. How am I supposed to know whether the bank or branch, the base amount has to be 50,000? Why not 49,999? You know, we still buy shoes for 399.99. I mean, you know, why not that? Why is it 0.0162%, Janine? Why is it not 0.0625%, Janine? Multiplied by A. A is the total liabilities as of that. Hey, man, listen, I got an E for maths once again. Do you really expect me to be able to understand this? Do you really expect the average chairperson of the Finance Committee, Treasury, in, let's say, a developed country like the U.S.? Oh, the U.S. have got 18 researchers. Maybe they can do it. But do you think the chairperson understands these things? I wonder if a minister even understands all this, really. All right. Or cabinet, frankly. I mean, let's be fair. So, hey, don't dump work on us that's not ours. So the researchers and the content advisor in particular must do their job. And once they approve of this thing, we will vote on it. If they need more time, so be it. But from today, they will work offline. But in the meanwhile, Janine, you're going to help the committee as a whole to understand, and then you'll be accessible. You'll exchange phone numbers, and Koleko will facilitate that immediately meeting ends. By Monday, we should get a report from Esther as the coordinator about where things are on the cross-referencing and from page 11 onwards. The rest, as the committee members, we've done. So we won't vote on the bill until that process is over. So Treasury, is in your interest to take the calls from Esther or Inkululeko on behalf of the team. Right, let's go for this. Table A. Come on, Janine, let's go for it.
Okay. You've
summarized this thing. You've been sleeping on it. You talk to your grandchildren and children about it, so you know everything about it. Right.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. So just to very briefly explain, and this applies to each of the tables. So we have the different columns. So this table refers to the levies that are payable to the Prudential Authority. And in the first column, it sets out the different categories of entities that pay or will be paying levies to the Prudential Authority. We see here banks, or branches of banks and cooperative banks, et cetera. So that first column sets out the different types of entities who would be liable to make payments to the Prudential Authority. The second column indicates how frequently the levy is payable during a year. And so many of the levies are payable once per year, and they're determined on a basis. Some are payable quarterly. And so that would, whether it's an annual or a quarterly levy, that's indicated in the second column. Then the third column relating to the base amount, that sets out sort of the minimum amount that would be payable as a levy by an entity. And then we get into the formulas that determines above the base amount how much additionally would be due to be payable. And this is under the domain of the financial experts, particularly at the regulators, who did a lot of analysis, you know, to develop the particular amounts in the formulas. And then the fourth column determines how the variable amount, you know, that this item A that's listed in the variable amount formula is determined, and so these different variables are defined clearly. They are somewhat technical, but they should be understandable, particularly by the entities concerned. And then we have the overall formula. So you have the base amount plus what's calculated in relation to the variable amount would be the total amount that's paid. And then the final column indicates if there would be a maximum amount that would be payable in relation to the particular levy. So in this instance with banks, the maximum prudential levy that they would be paying would be 45 million, and the minimum would be 50,000. So then in between, you know, the difference, the total amount is really the critical calculation is in relation to what the variable amount. And so then in relation to each of the different types of entities, then there's the specific base amount and variable amount that are specified and how the variables are determined, and then there's a maximum amount that's set potentially, not with all of the levies, but with quite a few of them, there is a maximum amount set. So you can see the cooperative banks are much set at a much lower level, and the mutual banks are set at a somewhat intermediate level. So we have the banking institutions, and then we have the levies for the insurers. And again, there's a base amount, and then there's variable amounts, which for the insurers are based on the premiums that are written by the insurers. And then again, here there's a maximum amount. So then we have the non-life insurers and Lloyds as a reinsurer. And then we have for the life insurers, there's a separate, a different calculation and category. And then we have the micro insurers, which are the much smaller insurers. And so, the minimum amount is set much lower, and also the maximum amount that would be payable. And then we come into the different financial markets categories for exchanges and central securities depositories and the independent clearing houses and associated clearing houses. And again, there's the specific formulas, there's the base amount, the specific formulas to determine the variable amount and the definition of how the variable is determined. Just want to make sure I didn't go down too far. Okay, I think we're fine. So that's the financial markets infrastructures. And then, yeah, so there's quite a variety of the entities. And then also there's finally, the Prudential Authority is responsible for the Road Accident Fund. And so there's simply a base amount payable by the Road Accident Fund of 100,000 rand as a levy, because the Prudential Authority is responsible for supervising the Road Accident Fund. So that's for the first table. Are there any questions on that?
Yeah, hang on. We must first deal with this table because, you know, instead of doing everything. Any comments on the first table?
Yeah, so perhaps just on that last item, Che.
Yeah.
You know, again, 100,000 rand for the Road Accident Fund. It just, again, seems like a very arbitrary amount.
Yeah. It's actually right. The same thing.
And I think that interrogation of their transactions would be quite complex, and I'm not sure that it's reflective. But again, Chair, it's just pointing to the same principle that I've raised before.
Yeah, no. I don't know whether I can disagree with you, or the members of the committee can disagree with you. In fact, I was going to ask the same question. I went to the first one and thought to myself, Janine, that and team from Treasury, that look, how you decide on this is puzzling. That's, I mean, I don't know what it is. So you say, there's table A and type of super bank or branch, the very first one, base amount is 50,000. Okay, variable amounts. So the first question I want to ask you is, how you decide on these variable amounts, right? Firstly, what criteria do you use? Secondly, is it that you decide it's one single levy for the bigger entities, and then for the smaller entities, not to unduly burden them, you have them pay quarterly? For example, you either have an annual levy or you have a quarterly levy or some other phased levy. So the questions are, A, how you decide on 0.0062%, right? Secondly, how you decide on whether it's an annual or a quarterly levy. Of course, your base amount is also a question, how you arrive at that. I don't know. If you take that example, it could apply to any other one, but let's just take one because it's the first one that hit me. Okay, over to you, Janine.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I could request colleagues from the Prudential Authority to perhaps come in on that question about the determination of the Road Accident Fund levy, and then also, you know, how the analysis that was applied on, you know, to determine the base amounts and variable amounts, etc. I don't know, Yannette, can you come in, or other colleagues?
Maybe I can start, and then Stuart can also then add. So then the Road Accident Fund was difficult, I have to admit, for us to determine exactly what amount would be appropriate, because we had not previously supervised them and regulated them from a financial or prudential perspective, to be specific. So what we did in the end is we estimated what our supervisory efforts would entail, and then we looked at the size of the Road Accident Fund in combination with the supervisory activities, and that's how we got to the amounts that you have in Table A. And then, also what added to the complexity is the structuring of the Road Accident Fund. It is not a normal insurer as per the Insurance Act. Then generally, and I'll just make a few general comments, and then I'm going to ask my colleague Stuart Bobo to please come in and add with more detail. But generally, we looked at the nature, scale, and complexity of the entities, for example, banks versus cooperative banks, which you have on your screen at the moment. And then we determined the level of supervision that we need to have over those entities, the activities that we would need to perform in order to make sure that they are governed and financially sound in as far as possible. And then we use the regulatory returns which we have available to us, and we determine based on that what we need to use. For example, for banks, we use the total liabilities which they report to us, and then we added the variable amount. And then taking our budget at the time into consideration, that is how we got to the maximum amounts that are, or the ceilings, the maximums that we added in the last column. So you will note that, for example, cooperative banks, which are small institutions with a financial inclusion objective generally, and it's there for the community, they have got a very low amount, and it's also then capped at a very low amount of only 5,000 rand. But let me hand over to Stuart to also add. Thank you, Jim.
Can I come in? Thank you very much, Chair, and through you, Chair. So probably I'll start with the question that I think is much more simpler. The question around what led to us having an annual and some of the levies being paid quarterly. So what happened, Chair, is that we just adopted the old regime, which was under the FSB then, the Financial Services Board. So you will find that the FMIs that used to pay levies to the FSB used to pay their levies on a quarterly basis. So we didn't have a reason to change that system, which they are now so much used to. So we just adopted that, for the FMIs, but for the new financial institutions that we are going to be charging a levy as the PA, they were also used to paying, some sort of an annual licensing fee, which they used to pay annually. So we just adopted a similar approach. Then, Chair, the other question that you raised around, I think which speaks to proportionality, and I think Fukile also maybe touched on that, and also Paul, I think, also did some justice to that. So, Chair, the starting point is a budget, and as my other colleagues have already indicated, is that we are working on a cost recovery as a basis. So we have got like a pool of funding that we will determine as the PA. So these are the funds that we need for us to fund our budget. Then we see, how do we need, to raise those funds? Of course, proportionality plays a very important role in that, because we also don't want to burden the smaller entities. And you find that, even the formulas where they are structured, you find, the large financial institutions are going to contribute quite significant to that cost recovery. Chair, that's the only point I wanted to make. Thank you very much.
Okay. Does anybody else want to come in from the team, from the executive and Reserve Bank and so on? No. Okay. All right. Can we move on to the next one? Which is, excuse me. Which is on page 15, Schedule 2. Now, the applicability to those institutions from A to ZB, I don't have any issue with that. Does anybody else? No. I think the elevation of double levy payment, I don't have any issue with that. Does anybody else? Then three. Yeah, okay, you covered that in previous comment in the policy thing. It's table B that's problematic in the sense of how do we understand it. So I want to ask committee members, how do you want to proceed from 16 to 32? They have given us the method, right? And the same method is applied. So I could, from the chair, I'm not sure how Scoff did it, go through each formally, informally, but at least we've done it by pointing out, well, table B on banks or branch, any comment? Cooperative bank, any comment? Or do you want an explanation on every one of them? What do members feel? Dennis,
Chair, I think the principle has been established. I think that it would be repetitive to go through explanations on each one. We've gone through the definitions. We've gone through the various details on the entity. And I think just going over it briefly without an explanation on each line item would be more than sufficient.
Yeah, Dennis, that's how I feel. So if members don't have any problems, I'm going to do that. But I have to table as a chair for parliamentary procedure all the tables in some form or another. So we'll start with table B, bank or branch. Any comments? If anybody's got any comments, you'll interrupt. Cooperative bank, mutual bank, non-life insurer, life insurer, micro insurer, central securities depository, independent clearinghouse, associated clearinghouse, central counterparty, trade depository, over-the-counter derivative provider, credit rating agency. Janine, it surprises me the number of entities. I forgot many of these things, and some are totally new to me. Pension fund, occupational fund, and then we go on to pension fund administrator, collective investment schemes and securities, collective investment scheme and hedge funds. My God, foreign collective investment scheme, collective investment scheme in property, collective investment scheme in participation bonds, category 1 or 4, financial services providers, category 2, 2A or 3, financials. One thing that is admirable, I must say, colleague, is the finite detail in which they treat every entity, and they have to find, it's a gigantic task you fulfill here. I mean, it's really quite enormous what you've done here, all of you coordinated by Treasury. Then we go to page 22, it's category 1 or category 4 financial services providers in respect of those subcategories. Then financial services provider. Then we go to Schedule 3, colleagues. Table C must be applied to calculate the levy payable by a supervisor that is liable to pay the amount into the Schedule 1 or 2, right? Now, type of supervised entity, all supervised entities are liable to pay levies, calculate in accordance with Schedule 1 or 2, of course. Then Schedule 4 is the same application, the same format, and it goes on to look at all supervised entities that are liable to pay levies referred to in Schedule 2. Then we go to Schedule 5. The application is set out above. Then we go to the Office of the Pension Funds Adjudicator, Office of the Ombud Financial Services Providers, Table F, the application, and then we go on to each one, Bank of Japan, Mutual Bank, Branch, right, then the memorandum, right, we don't go through that, right, and then we mercifully are relieved of your tables, Janine. And anybody object to clear out communications printing at Dennis? The DA have a policy. Okay, so before we proceed, finally, I wanted to ask Comrade Moletsane, what's the EFF position? Look at page 26. What's the EFF position on the Office of the Ombud Financial Services Providers? Do you think that the base amount, 1,100 francs, and then the variable amounts AA 690, AA equal to W, WBB, and W average levy base is the maximum rounds of 333,275. What's the EFF policy on that? What does the CIC say? And then to the DA, I'd like to ask them, turning to page 24, no, not page 24, that's too easy. DA, Dennis, smarty pants. Can we go to page 21? Now, what do you think of category 1 or 4 financial services provided? The third row there. It's 5,520 times. W is the variable amount, W being the average total number. Levy is equal to base amount plus variable amount, and it's 2.5 million. So what does the DA think about that, smart friends? What is your position as a party? What is your caucus going to say about that? Because you'll be reserving your position because you've consulted your caucus. So what is your new or your old chief whip going to say about it? What is Mr. Taylor is going to say about this? What's the DA position? When you went for elections, what did you say about this? And for the 2024 election manifesto, Mr. Ryder, what are you going to say about this? Why is Willie Alcombe so quiet? Why are you never allowed to speak? Willie, you'll answer that question on behalf of the DA rather than Dennis, who we brought up.
In Afrikaans, we've got a saying, schoonmaker, hou jou by jou lees. In other words, let the experts deal with what they're good with. And I know that everybody is much more of an expert on this than
I. Okay, smarty science expert, Dennis, big mouth writer. What's the position of the GA on this?
Chair, the position is that we still are a little unsure about what the impact is going to be. And certainly the measurement of W... is going to be a bit of a moving target. So yeah. The flexibility of employment regimes mean that the calculation of W is going to be quite an interesting process, but it'll have to be done at a fixed date. But generally, I think we're adopting a position of we'd like, you know, wait and see. We don't agree with key principles within the legislation.
Oh, Dennis, man, I wasn't seeing
And we will be reserving our position.
Okay, Freedom Front Plus, what's your position on categories 2A or 3? My friend, Pani?
Jay, thank you. Yes, we also reserve our position, Jay.
Well, that's not it. What's your informal position, Pani? What do you think the Freedom Front Plus will say? Yeah, Comrade Boletane, what's the Marxist-Leninist panelist view on category 2A or 3? What does Capital say about that?
For now, Chair, I reserve the position of my organization until I get a better mandate.
Yeah, you see, my brother, our problem in the ANC is we've got different groupings, so I can't arrive at any policy position because, you know, We if we put this issue on the agenda, then we will be bickering over yet another issue. So I too reserve my judgment on the matter. Right. Having said that, colleagues, I think on a more serious note, that was facetious, obviously, and teasing in a lighthearted way because this bill, this table really knocked me out. Okay. So firstly, colleagues, I think what Dennis says, we should agree. Annual report on how things are panning out in practice, right? Point one. Point two is that I don't think there's any harm in saying that the tables were quite challenging for the committee, and once again reemphasizes, can you put it, it's not about you, and please don't take this personally, although we would like more support, you know, that, you know, once again emphasizes the imbalances between the executive and parliament. And then thirdly, I think we have to have cross-referencing done by the staff. I did this painstakingly for up to 20 years until somebody pointed out to me it's a ridiculous thing that I spent hours doing the cross-referencing. I need to point out that Parliament's been errant, and so has the executive more recently in the last few years, not least the last term, as those who were interested will recall. And when we processed bills, there were glitches in the typographical stuff and the cross-referencing was wrong, words were missing, and then the NCO appeared to come to our rescue. And those had nothing to do with the politicians, it had to do with the staff on both sides. So we are, what are we on the NCOP side? So just can we please check the cross-referencing? That is the task of the staff, really. And you can check with your committee managers if you want. It's not the task of the chair. I used to do it for 20 years. And you know what? It's time now that the staff did their job in this regard. On the matter of the tables, obviously, Esther, the team, we don't expect you to have technical expertise that can match these people who work full-time on these things. But we'd like you to look at that. So on these various things, we'd like a report on the processes that you have fulfilled since today and next week, Monday at noon. Then on the report, I have a draft of some sort from you, and I think you now need to rework that based on the things that have been said. Dennis, if you have a paragraph or so you want to craft to any other member from the opposition or any member of the ANC, please send it to Nkululeko within 48 hours so it can be inserted in the report. So on this bill, unless members pick up between now and next Tuesday, I think we'll be ready to vote on it unless something comes up where we find out there are glitches, our staff shows it to us, and or
a member does. There may be words missing here and there, but I have read the entire thing until, I've been honest, when I came to the first schedule, I despaired, right? So I've been open and saying that I have also read every line up till the first table. Well, I started the table and then I got lost, okay? So having said that, I think we're ready to move on to the next one, colleagues. Okay, National Treasury and the rest of the team, can we move on to the next poll, please?
Chairperson, I really think we need danger pay for these two bills.
Yeah. Hey, I want to tell you guys something. So I know a municipality. I won't mention which one it is in the map. So, you know, your colleagues, right? You were in council. I don't know if it applied to yours. They will stand up and say, no, we are against these increases of councillor salaries, right? And then the MEC sort of looks at things and, you know, there's a draft promulgated. And in the meanwhile, guess who advises the ANC chief reporter? You know, because some of your colleagues, I mean, it's a fact, a historical overflow from the apartheid era. The very people that will stand up and oppose, by the way, the bill, you know, the position that councillor says increased. Quietly, they strengthen the argument of, let's say, the ANC, which wants to increase, right? They, you know, why don't you argue this case? So that's hilarious, right? The stories, I used to be chairing local government at the time, so I used to pick up all these things. Okay, fine, that's the way politicians are. It's not about your party or anything. The reverse might happen if we had the skills that your party sometimes has. Right, the only skill you don't have is you can't win elections. But leave that aside, and that's what finally counts. And we do win elections. And we will, whatever happens, even if we dip below 50%, we'll still be the largest party. Then you will say, hey, the party lost. Never mind that you got half the percentage vote. You'll say, we lost. Never mind that you fell short 100% of your target. You'll say, we lost. Okay, Baba Rafale, isn't that correct, my friend? Okay. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Janice, I love one of the states. Imbalula said, yeah. Although he was rationalizing, he said, probably, I think it was him. He said, yeah, no way in the world will a party that wins like 45% of the vote is regarded as having lost, you know, because the other parties have got 20% and 10% and so on. Well, it's honest. You think in your lifetime the EFF will ever go beyond 10%? Well, it's honest. Let's have that offline. Okay, now enough nonsense. The chairperson must control himself. Let's go. I'm chastising myself. As the chair, I'm chastising myself. Right. The reason is because it's such an exciting bill. And if you think that one was exciting, this one's even more exciting. Okay, let's go for it. Janine, the evergreen Janine and Vukile, who's going first? Now, here too, I must say, I really feel this thing is written well, the bill as a whole. Okay? The whole bill, actually, let me just tell you, whoever crafted this bill, although it's difficult for the previous one, it's well done. This one is torturous also, right? But it's well written, I must say. Right, so can we go for it, Janine? To me, it's a more technical bill, right? And I couldn't see much in it, really. And so I would quickly through it, I must confess, colleagues. Right. So can you help us, Janine? Obviously, definition is straightforward, right? Now, administration of levies, frankly, this is quite straightforward. does anybody want to comment on administration of levies? Because I couldn't see what's here that needs us to interrogate. So, Janine, I don't think any member is putting the hand up, so I'm taking it that this is fine. Then we go to the next one, deposit. It's the same thing here, colleagues, there's nothing there. Amendment of laws, short title and commencement, right? Really, I mean, colleagues, is there anything there that we can't say is okay? Now, this is where I fell off my chair, Janine. And I think there's very little for you to do, Janine. I mean, what is there to do here? Oh, God, yeah, okay. So, Janine, I don't know, colleagues, what you want done here, but let's ask Janine to take us through each amendment or appeal. Now here, you see here, you are amending so many other bills, which I don't have before me. here again, can we ask the staff to please look at this carefully and engage with Fukile and Janine and sort this out? But I really think that this is a technical task, really. There's no policy issue here. You might have got a sub-clause or a clause wrong. So I don't know the role that legal services plays in this regard, but I want to appeal to my friend there, Frank Jenkins, to help the team as well. So I'm not sure who plays what role, and I keep thinking I don't like the silo approach, even amongst the staff. Just sort it out, not for me to prescribe. As far as we're concerned, the content advisor, so I think Esther and Poppy and Inkolelek with the team, they must also seek the help of Frank, and Frank's ever so available to help. And he's very sort of diligent. So he has helped us before in this regard, Esther, so you can work with him as well in regard, because it's a lot to do with pre-existing bills and acts. I mean, pre-existing acts. Okay, Janine, can you help us quickly and explain to us what you've done?
Thank you very much, Chair.
I will take it, Janine, that remember, including Frank, remember Frank, you can speak at any time, ask and Esther, ask and Poppy, and include it. But Frank, if you have any issues you want to raise, please feel free, right? Okay, let's go for it.
So, thank you. So the consequential amendments amend a few pieces of legislation, in particular, mainly provisions in the Financial Sector Regulation Act, especially chapters 16 of that act, to facilitate the administration of the levies that will be imposed. So very briefly, to go through these first few proposed amendments, the first one to the section, to this Pension Funds Act, it's providing for to provide that the funds of the adjudicator would be those that are those contemplated in Section 247 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, as opposed to, which includes the levies, et cetera, and fees. So this is updating references appropriately to align with the overall funding framework that's provided for in the Financial Sector Regulation Act.
And, yeah, that's straightforward, okay.
And then fine. The next amendments to the Banks Act and the Mutual Banks Act, they are providing that as the Prudential Authority will be receiving levies, they would no longer be imposing separate licensing fees in relation to application for licenses, because the entities will be paying levies for the funding of the Prudential Authority. So from a funding perspective...
Yeah, this I didn't check, Janine. I don't have these accents. You know, I actually didn't check the FSRA this morning. I didn't have the time. But I will, where it concerns the Act we passed in 2017, I will check that also with the staff. But these other acts is what's worrying me, right? Okay, can we go on, please?
And then again, with the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, that's also a similar alignment to what's being provided for the Office of the Pension Funds Adjudicator, so that the funding is specified as set out in Chapter 16 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So then we move on to the main body of the amendments in the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And so first we have some amendments to definitions. So we have amendments to the definition of deposit insurance premium to also include Schedule 5, which is being inserted, that will provide for the deposit insurance premiums. Then we have a definition of Financial Sector and Deposit Insurance Levies Act that's inserted. And then we have an adjustment to the definition of levy to refer specifically to the Financial Sector and Deposit Insurance Levies Act. Then we have the insertion of a definition of member, and that those are the banks, branches of banks, and mutual and cooperative banks that will be paying the deposit insurance premiums. We also have a definition of premium period that sets out, similar to the levy period in the levies bill, that sets out the period on which the premium of deposit insurance premiums will be determined. Then we adjust the definition of special levy to align with how it's provided in the Financial Sector and Deposit Insurance Levies Act. And then we have the amendment of Section 166BG in the Financial Sector Regulation Act, and this sets out provides for the imposition of the deposit insurance premiums. And so the banks, mutual banks, branches of banks, and cooperative banks will be liable to pay deposit insurance premiums. And then we provide, you know, if there has been a premium paid during a period, and during that period it's already been paid for, then there would be a refund, a pro rata refund of the premium that was paid if the bank had its license canceled or suspended during that period. And that's similar to what's provided for in the Levies Act in relation to the various levies. And then we have amendments to Section 237 in the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And then this is adding some additional wording in the section to refer also to the fee, the levies in terms of the Financial Sector Levies Act, and also referencing to the premiums that are imposed under the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So basically throughout the Chapter 16 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, we're adding appropriate referencing to the levies and premiums, and making refinements to align with the levies bill, and also how the levies will be collected and administered and distributed. And then we specify, you know, how the levies that are payable in terms of the Levies Act, when they're due and payable, and to the regulators, and also the deposit insurance levies, when they're due and payable to the Corporation for Deposit Insurance, and also the deposit insurance premiums. So that's, providing for, you know, when the entities must be paying the various levies and premiums. And then we specify that different levies may be imposed for different categories of supervised entities or members. And then also deposit insurance premiums may be imposed for different categories of entities and members. And that's in line with what's specified in the different schedules to the levies bill. Then we have we have an amendment to the heading of Section 238, and then we have, instead of referencing to deposit insurance premium, as well as fees and levies, and then similarly with Section 239, we have an adjustment to the heading of the section and insertion of references to deposit insurance premium as well. So the proposals will also, that, you know, that are referred to in that section regarding levies would also be made in relation to the deposit insurance premiums. And then we provide also similarly to what's provided in the Levies Act in Clause 10 in the Levies Bill, we also provide that in relation to the deposit insurance premium schedule 5, that will be included in the Financial Sector Regulation Act in terms of these amendments, that schedule could also potentially be amended in terms of essentially an identical process to what's provided in Clause 10 in the Levies Act. And then we make some amendments to Section 40 regarding consultation requirements, and mainly there we insert references to deposit insurance premium in that section appropriately. And similarly with section 241, again, we're mainly inserting references to members as is relevant in relation to the imposition of deposit insurance premiums and also to deposit insurance premiums. And again, similarly in relation to section 242, and then with section 243, again, we insert some references to deposit insurance premiums or deposit insurance levies, which were not previously referred to in that section, but it's appropriate to refer to those levies and premiums in the section. And similar amendments are proposed to section 244 to also provide for the deposit insurance premiums and deposit insurance levies. And this section sets out how interest would be charged on outstanding levy amounts, deposit insurance levy amounts, and premium amounts. And then with section 245, then we address exemptions from deposit insurance premiums, the potential to grant exemptions. And then in section 246, again, we insert references to deposit insurance premiums and deposit insurance levies. And so we insert some wording that relates to how the levies will be collected and will be allocated and distributed by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority and the Reserve Bank in relation to the various levies to ensure that they're allocated to the different bodies and distributed. And it specifies, you know, where the amounts must be paid to by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority or the Reserve Bank when they're distributing the amounts. And also in relation to the levies and premiums. And then in relation to section 248, with the Corporation for Deposit Insurance, they will be required to also, similarly to what's required for the other financial sector bodies, they will have to prepare an annual budget of estimates and expenditure for the coming year, and also financial accounts and financial statements, and also it assigns the responsibility for the preparation of the accounts and ensuring that the expenditure is in accordance with the budget and accounts is clearly specified to be the chief executive officer of the corporation. And then also in relation to the Corporation for Public Deposits, we also specify some particular matters which they would need to specify in their annual financial statements and accounts and reports to ensure that there's open accounting and reporting. And then we propose to amend section 288 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act to potentially allow for regulations to be made by the Minister of Finance to prescribe banking and financial accounting requirements in relation to the administration of levies and interest on levies, and also regulations might prescribe banking and financial accounting arrangements that would need to be adhered to, and also also accounting arrangements. So there can be regulations made that would provide more detail and requirements in relate that must be adhered to ensure that the levies and premiums are properly administered and accounted for. And then finally, we have an amendment to Section 301 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And this relates to the transitional arrangement relating to the determination of fees under current financial sector laws, as going forward, once Chapter 16 of the Financial Sector Regulation Act is brought into operation, once this bill is hopefully enacted, then going forward, there would need to be a schedule of fees that would be prescribed by the different regulators. So that would sort of replace the fees that are currently imposed under the different financial sector laws. So similar fees might be imposed for similar matters, but it needs to be done under the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And so this is just providing that for a transitional period, then the existing arrangements would automatically fall away immediately. Then a new determination of fees would be made under the Financial Sector Regulation Act that would replace those fees. So it's just to ensure a bit of a transitional arrangement there. And then finally, we have Schedule 5 of the that would be inserted into the Financial Sector Regulation Act, and that sets out the different categories of entities that will be paying the deposit insurance premiums, and they'll pay on a monthly basis. And then again, we have the manner in which the premiums that would be payable would be determined each month. And then we just amend the arrangement of sections for the Financial Sector Regulation Act.
Okay. So
that concludes the bill.
Yeah, of course. Yes, thank you very much. So firstly, Janine, Bukile and team, I'm a bit surprised as to the number of amendments you made to the FSRA, right? Because obviously, when you planned this whole model, you anticipated there's going to be all these other changes as well. In other words, you had a tranche of bill spending, and the gap between one and other bill has been huge. But obviously, too, on the other hand, if you have more and more consultations on the bills that follow, obviously you change things and go back to the FSRA and have to amend it. So on the one hand, these amendments are perfectly understandable, but the number of them surprises me, right? It does make the task of the team easier because they'll focus mainly on the FSRA and just check that everything's in order. From what I can see, the overall number of amendments you made to the FSRA are surprising, actually. Is there any comment you want to make on that?
Thank you very much, Chair, and Bukile can come in, but I'll just initially just explain the main necessity for most of the amendments. A lot of them relate to the implementation of deposit insurance levies and deposit insurance premiums. And at the time that the Financial Sector Regulation Act was before Parliament and enacted, that work was still ongoing and was still very much under discussion. And so that the Parliament only enacted the legislation that really provides for the Deposit Insurance Corporation and the envisaged premiums and levies last year. So in the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Act of last year. So quite a number of those amendments do relate to appropriately accommodating the deposit insurance levies and premiums within the framework that was overall envisaged for the levies, to ensure that there's appropriate referencing. So that's one aspect that was of a significant nature that led to many of the amendments. And then another aspect that did result in some amendments is that originally when the Financial Sector Regulation Act was developed, it was thought that the Financial Sector Conduct Authority would do all of the collection of the levies, and that's how it was But now it's proposed that the Prudential Authority should have a role in collecting levies for the Prudential, or the Reserve Bank, sorry, should have a role in collecting levies for the Prudential Authority and the premiums and deposit insurance levies for the Corporation for Deposit Insurance. So I think those were the two main aspects that really necessitated what ultimately ended up being quite a number of amendments, although not radically substantial in nature. It's more trying to fit these changes into the overall frame.
Okay, I can see that, but fine, I get you. I don't want to say anything more. I mean, I'm just, okay, fine, I won't say anything more. I don't see any other hand up. So is there anybody else who wants to say something before we draw to a close? No. I think this is an easier bill to process. The schedules are easier to process. I don't have anything further to say on this. So is there anyone who wants to make an overall comment at all? I don't see any hand up. Oof, we finished much earlier than I had anticipated. Okay, then I just want to say one thing. We're in the hands of the staff, so if they deliver by next Monday, then we will be ready to vote on this bill. Otherwise, we will have to postpone it. Well, we'll have the meeting, but we will then decide when we vote on it. So I plead with the staff to just follow on what we've agreed on. And secondly, I need to draw the attention of this committee to the BBSA issue, where from what we could tell, there was nothing on our side, in Coleleco's side in particular, that led to the postponement of that sitting. Now, it is important, and Coleleco's been pushing me, and rightly so, that's his job. I mean, you know, he's doing his job, that we focus on the bill and come to DBSA when we can. But my concern is that because it's a postponed meeting from the last quarter, that we should meet the DBSA this quarter. And if we can't find a slot on a Tuesday, we'll find a Friday or whatever, or a Thursday evening, because you can do a virtual meeting or whatever, we can negotiate that. But we should meet with the DBSA this quarter. So on that one, we agreed. Now, Dennis, over to you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chair, yeah, just for clarity, I did note that we initially had a meeting set up for this Friday, and I note that we've undertaken that work today. Just to confirm then that there is no meeting on Friday.
Yeah, the reason, as you recall, is that we were having public hearings, but then people didn't pitch up, and that's why Inkululeko sensibly brought it forward. So there's no need for such a meeting. But when it comes to DBSA Inkululeko, I think we'll slot it in on a Friday if we have to, okay? Or an evening if people want, whatever suits people. Fridays and Mondays, it takes a lot of us from all parties. We play various roles, and, you know, a lot of our Monday in particular and Friday, let alone weekends, gets taken up. So I would prefer that we meet on an evening rather, after the House has risen. So, but then sometimes the House rises so late. So I'm cool, whatever the majority wants. You can send a note out and check with them whether they want to meet on a Wednesday evening, or maybe Wednesday because we meet in the morning, maybe a Thursday evening, or a Friday morning, whatever suits them, the majority, I'll go by that. Okay, having said that, I've got nothing further to say, except to thank Treasury and the rest of you who are here from the various entities. I really think, you know, we must acknowledge the amount of work you've put in, really. You really must be acknowledged, Vukile, Janine, and your team. It's a lot of work, really. And I know we just think, oh, you know, here's a 32-page bill, but it's 32,000 hours you spent on it. and the quality of what you're doing, to the extent I'm able to assess it, as I said, with all my limitations, I think is good overall, you know? And I'm glad you're there, and I hope that you will pass it on to the next generation, these skills that you have, and create the space for them to have the experience. But thank you very much. We hope to vote on the bill next week. And if all goes well in Kululeko, am I right? The following week or so, we should get the fee cover. Am I right, my friend?
Yes, you're correct, Chairperson. You're correct.
Okay, good. So we could even finish that bill before the term ends. I'd like that personally. I think we all do, because it's a very important, in fact, that's fast, more important, frankly. I know Janine and they might disagree, and Keelan, but you know, that bill is more important in some ways to process expeditiously. You would have seen in the media this week that it's gone to Cabinet. I think Cabinet approved the omnibus or multi-portfolio bill. So that will come to the NA soon and then to us. Okay, but we will do the same. We will have the briefing with the NA committee if that's possible, because they'll be getting the tax bill. So we'll see if it's possible. If it's possible, yes. It's less important that we're there at the public hearing in a context where you know, the fourth term takes up so much of our time. They are our tax bills that are a priority and our budget MTBVS process. Okay. Having said that, thank you all. Bye then.